And joining us right now on the PMP Radio Network is Christopher Palaha. He is the star of a movie that I saw, and I got to tell you, it gets your heart. Gets you right here, folks. It's called Where Hope Grows. It's an unexpected friendship and journey that will take you to places you haven't seen for a while. You might recognize Chris from things like Ringer, Life Unexpected, and North Shore. And I think you're going to really, really like him in this film. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the film, Chris.
Yeah, well, thanks again for having me, Mark. It was a pretty simple process, actually. I was at home, and I got a phone call from a friend of mine named Shane Benton, and he and I had a friend in common, Chris Dowling, who wrote and directed the script and said, you know, Chris has this script. Would you mind looking at it? And then literally within the same hour, my agent called and said, I've got a script that I want you to read. There's an offer out for you. And I read it, and it was a really great story. I thought Chris did a great job with the subject matter and just the treatment of the characters. And it was funny because I'd seen a couple films. I'd read a few scripts that tried to live in the world that Chris created and just didn't do quite a good job with them as Chris did. So when I read that, I was like, yeah, of course I want to do this. And we were kind of off to the races. We spent 21 days filming in Louisville, Kentucky. And it was one of those jobs that, you know, it didn't feel like work. It was just kind of it was just an amazing experience. The whole thing has been an unusual experience.
Well, the film is a really, it features a lot of faith and emotion, and it's one of those really kind of feel-good films. Did you know it when you were filming it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we knew we had something special in just the sense that, you know, David DeSantis, who plays Produce, who has Down syndrome, his family and him and his story and just who he was, like, I'd never worked with somebody with Down syndrome, so I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know if they were going to have to feed him his lines. I just really didn't know what to expect. And, you know, the thing about David is that he's so smart, and he shatters every stereotype that you could possibly conceive of bringing to the table when you're working with someone with Down syndrome. So for me, that experience alone was just like, you know what, if no one sees this film, then this right here, like working with David, was everything. Like that was the purpose of being here. And then what was unique about it is that Chris Dowling and I, we'd get together on the phone probably once a month. At first it was once a week, and we would just pray. We'd just say, you know, and we prayed for, you know, distribution. And a film like this with this kind of budget, I would say that 99% of movies within this kind of budget, I guess budget is really the big deciding factor, don't make it to theaters. They kind of either do a straight-to-video release or they kind of disappear. And the fact that Lionsgate and Roadside picked it up and distributed, the fact that we were in theaters in May and had a robust, for what we were 276 theaters, and the weekend that we opened, we were third or fourth place behind Mad Max, Pitch Perfect 2, there was one other movie that had been out prior to us, and then us, for per theaters, like, capita. And we were in the theaters for about 4 weeks in my hometown. We were there for 5 weeks, so it was kind of a really amazing story. And then the reviews were great. You know, we were happy with a lot of the reviews. And then now we've got this platform where we're going to be released at home, and it's going to give people a chance who didn't have a theater that was showing the movie a chance to see it. And it's felt special and kind of anointed the whole time. So cool project to be a part of.
Yeah, I can see it being a big hit on Netflix or Hulu or in the stores, because it's a good family film, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope, you know? It's like you can sit down and watch it with your kids. And I mean, I have three sons, and they've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've seen it 4 or 5 times. it was so cute. The first time that my youngest, his name is Jude, he's 4, met David, he froze up, and he said, "That's Produce." And he literally was starstruck. Like, he approached David like he was, you know, Tom Cruise or Tim Tebow or somebody. It was kind of awesome.
Mm. That's funny, huh? And now, yeah. You mentioned you have three sons. Any of them inclined toward acting type of thing? I know they're young.
I don't know. We got one in the middle who really, it's funny. It's like, you know, what makes an actor? And he's just so expressive, and he's the way that he sees the world is so interesting, and he's, you know, he loves telling stories. So I'm always, I think, kind of like, well, maybe you'll fall in my footsteps. He reminds me a lot of me. And my oldest son loves football. He's a quarterback, and that's what he wants to do for a living. And of course, he's 10, so we'll see how that goes. If it's a family business and it's doing all right by me, then you know I wouldn't be against it.
Yeah, it's interesting about football. My son played since he was 6 years old, quarterback. And he went all through high school playing and college, and now he's a high school coach.
Really?
So you never know.
You never know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, my kid is, he's crazy about it. He's been throwing the ball. He's the same thing, quarterback, and he's been throwing the ball since he was, I guess, around 6 years old, too, and just loves it. Loves it.
You're kind of a rarity in the business. You've been married since 2003 to the same person.
To the same woman, yeah. We've got a healthy, robust marriage, so it's like it's an anomaly. Yeah, sometimes I don't feel like I fit into Hollywood, but we're here and we're plugging away.
Well, you've had a pretty good career, and you know, and I'm sure many, many good things are going to come in the future too. This can only help this film.
Yeah, thanks. I hope so. Yeah.
You know, we had a bunch of people that sent in some questions for you, so I'll ask one of them. One person wanted to know how you felt portraying JFK Jr.
Well, it was an overwhelming experience. He had just recently passed away when we shot the film. I think it was only done maybe 3 years after he passed away or 4 years after he passed away. And I knew that they were huge shoes to fill. And I knew what my goal, because it was a made-for-television movie, and I think it was for TBS.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, it only had a certain amount of budget, and the quality was only going to be, you know, it was going to be what it was. I remember thinking to myself, if I don't get destroyed in the press, like if people just don't rip me apart because I'm trying to play, you know, this guy that just everybody loves and it's too new to even try to, you know, to do that, then to me that was the sign of success. And, we got left alone in the reviews. It wasn't good. No one panned it. I mean, it was just one of those things where they were like, okay, here's the thing. People talked about it, and I think 60 million people that night saw it. I mean, it's kind of a huge thing. And it's funny because I don't get recognized for too much, but randomly, even, you know, 10, what was this now? I guess this is 12 years later. Every once in a while, someone will come up and be like, hey, you were America's Prince. I'll be like, yeah, yeah.
I got to think that's a really tough thing to do, because not only was he an icon, because from that little picture from 1963 of him saluting his father's coffin, and then becoming quote unquote America's hunk and the best looking guy in the world and all that stuff, so, and then the tragic death with him and his wife, it's just a tough thing to fall in. But
it's like, how do you do that? Right? How do you do that? That's why my goal was, like, if I don't just get destroyed, if people leave me alone, I think that'll be, because it is like, how do you play that, and how do you but you know what? It was an honor to be a part of that world for a minute. Like, I learned so much about John F. Kennedy Jr. and the family. And one of the things that was most impressive to me was the way that he treated people. He just treated everybody with dignity and the same amount of respect. And he would be waiting in line. They'd be like, come on, Mr. Kennedy, you can jump in. And he's like, nope, I'm not going to jump in front of all these people. Like, they're all here. And it was story after story. And playing him has given me a rare opportunity to have people just walk up to me and tell me stories that they had, like they met him or they've known him, and I've never heard one person say anything disparaging. Like, he must have been a really unique person.
I had never heard anybody say negative either. And of course, I live on the Cape, where his family resided, in Hyannisport. Okay. I'm only about 20 minutes away from there. So there's still people talk about him all the time, and his wife and his father and his uncles, and, you know, they're all legendary.
I think the real tragedy of that whole summer in 99 was he was just about to run for Senate, for New York Senate. I think he was going to have a whole political life ahead of him. I mean, I don't know. That was the year that Hillary Clinton won, so it would have been, I don't know how that would have turned out, but it was...
It certainly would have been very interesting.
Yeah.
And he had that magazine, which he was doing, and that did very well, too.
It did, yeah, it did. It was, and that was a sort of a success story because it came out with a big splash, and then there was a little bit of slump, but he pushed it through, and it started to rise up again. I remember buying that. I lived in New York City at the time. I was going to NYU, and I remember seeing George, you know, the glossy cover with, you know, it was either Cindy Crawford looked up like, you know, dressed up like George Washington, or George Clooney was on the cover once.
Yep.
You know, and that's hard to do.
It's especially, that's a really tough business to be in.
Yes.
Talking about tough businesses, well, acting's a tough one, too. Tell us, for all the folks out there who haven't met you before, how did you get in the show business? I know you were from, you're from Reno, right?
That's right, yeah. I was born and raised in Reno, Nevada. I sort of, early on, my first success on the stage was in first grade. I played Christopher Robin, and I had a line, it was tut tut looks like rain, and my one of the teachers who was standing in the back of the lunchroom where we had the play, said, you were the only child I could hear on stage. And that was one of those compliments that, like, you know, that fed me for a few years. And then I went to a high school called Robert Louis Stevenson, RLS, and it was a boarding school in, this is rough, this is real rough, Mark, but it was Pebble Beach, California.
Oh, yeah.
And my freshman year, I wasn't doing so great because the kids were very smart. It was like a prep school, and the dean of students and I had a conversation, and he said, you know, you got to get involved in something after school, and we got to get your GPA up. And so I tried out for a play, and I tried out for the basketball team, just either one. And I got cut from the basketball team, but I made the play, and the experience really changed my life. It was one of those moments where I just fell in love with acting. And I remember calling my parents up and being like, Mom, Dad, I know what I want to do for a living. And they said, what's that, honey? I said, I'm going to be an actor. There was like 30 seconds of silence on the phone. And finally, my dad was like, huh, well, let's see how that goes.
Now, what was your first paid gig?
It was Joan Rivers. She had a play that she was in New York. She had a reading at her house, and I got paid $100 to go and sit down in this beautiful mansion up near, I guess it was the Museum of, it's the Met. Right? What's the big one on Fifth? The big, beautiful museum on Fifth.
I think it's the Metropolitan. That's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, the Met, right? Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Yeah.
And it was up there, and I remember going and sitting down and being a part of this group of probably, you know, 15 other actors, and I had maybe 8 lines. And as I walked out, I got handed a check for $100, and I thought, man, I've done it. I got here.
And what was Joan like to work with?
She was cool. She was fun, really, really funny and great. You know, the play was funny, and it was a cool experience. And just, I was so young. I mean, I was sort of overwhelmed by the whole thing. And then I got on the subway and went down to the Grange Hall where I was waiting tables. And so that was it was the actor's life in New York City, which is very different than an actor's life in L.A. I think it's a lot easier in New York because you have a little more dignity for a while.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's another thing that someone told me that you do, when someone wrote to me and said that you were a marathoner, is that true?
Oh, man, I couldn't call myself a marathoner. I've run 2 marathons. One was the New York City Marathon that my brother sort of dared me to run, and I did that in 5 hours, which is, like, okay for your first marathon. The second marathon I ran was in Honolulu when I was working on North Shore, and it took me 7 hours to complete. But now I'll say that, and I'll admit to that, but I have to add that I didn't sleep the night before because I was working. I didn't eat before the race, so I was running on an empty stomach. I was wearing brand new shoes, and then I carried my son over the last, like, mile. So up Diamond Head and down and across the finish line. So I have an excuse, but it's still it doesn't qualify me as a marathon in the least.
Well, Chris, I got to tell you, as a guy who's never run a marathon, someone who runs it in 7 hours, carrying their kid for the last hour or last mile, has a lot of respect in my eyes. So,
well, thank you.
You know, and I was not that familiar with you as an actor because I haven't seen most of these shows. Although there were some very successful shows you've been part of. But anybody in particular you want to talk about, some of the folks, some of these shows, because that's what people want to hear. They want to know about the castmates. Do you get together? That's what every single question is about. So
they're like, do you still see? I have had the pleasure of working with some some pretty amazing actors and actresses. Some of my top ones are, if some of your listeners out there have seen Life Unexpected, that's a cast that we just have stuck together. So Britt Robertson and Shuri Appleby and Kerr Smith and Austin Basis and Austin Butler and Liz Tigler, all of these people were from Life Unexpected, and we still see each other. We still get together and have these barbecues, and they'll come over to my house, we'll go over to Liz's house, and it's really kind of, it's fun because it became this family, which is a unique experience in this town. I mean, there's most of the shows I've worked on, we all kind of, it's like an old mining camp that everyone goes to, digs for gold, and then when it's a bust, they all just disappear and go off to other places.
Mm-hmm.
And this last one, Rainn Wilson, is a pretty awesome guy. Again, he was Dwight. A lot of your listeners probably know him best.
On The Office, sure.
The Office.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he just a really awesome, intelligent, spiritual, you know, he's Baha'i, and he's very strong in his faith. And so I'm a Christian, and so we would have these long conversations on set about, you know, our different belief systems, and he was open to that, and it was a cool friendship that developed there. But yeah, and then Judy Greer is someone that I had a chance to work with on Ashton Kutcher's show, this show we did called Misguided. And every time I go to a job, every time I start a job, I'll make like a little goal list of what I want to accomplish, or, you know. And one of the goals is always to act like Judy Greer acted on set, because she was just so gracious to everybody and so kind to the crew. And she just made it, you know, seem like a family versus a job. And so that was something I learned from her.
It's cool. You know, you mentioned being a Christian, and this is kind of a difficult time for Christians around the world. Are you involved at all in politics in terms of that?
You know, it's a funny question. I haven't been, but I feel more and more compelled to that arena because, you know, I think that, you know, as an actor, you have such an interesting point of view, and you have such an interesting advantage in reaching people and communicating and sharing ideas and talking about stuff. And the question lately in my mind is this all there is? Like, am I just here to, you know, do some TV shows that come and go? And or is there more? You know, is there more to the conversation? So, yeah, I mean, the world is interesting right now. I mean, it's getting really dark and there's, you know, in Iran and Iraq, there's Christians that are being, you know, taken out, and mm-hmm. ISIS with the beheading, which sort of was shockingly kind of, people talked about it over here, but it wasn't like, there was no outrage. And
none. No outrage
yeah,
at all.
There was no outrage, and it was really, it's kind of confusing. So, yeah, there are certain pullings in my heart to be a voice for people, but I don't know. I mean, until that moment, I don't know.
Because I noticed that all the liberal actors, they have no hesitation to get out there and promote stuff that isn't godly at all. So it would be nice to have some people who are on the other side being spokespeople and kind of getting involved. I think that this film, in a way, Where Hope Grows, does some of God's work, I think.
Well, you know, it's a great, the political question that you just answered, you know, this film became a topic for a lot of, like, the conversation that I sort of introduced to the table, and it wasn't a popular one, was, you know, knowing David, one of the conversations that surrounds, you know, people who have Down syndrome and parents who are going to have a baby with Down syndrome, and this is something that I learned that was so fascinating. A lot of times doctors, the very first thing they say is, okay, so you're going to have a child, and that child's going to have Down syndrome, and here are your three options. You can have an abortion, and you can terminate the pregnancy. Here are facilities that you can give the baby up if you choose to have the baby. And then thirdly, if you choose to keep the baby, here are some resources that will help your family deal with someone with Down syndrome. When I found that out, and the sort of the abortion rate for people who have Down, you know, people who are having babies with Downs is really high.
Very high, because it's encouraged.
For me, yeah, what's that?
It's encouraged, so it's very high.
It's encouraged. It's literally the first thing they offer you. Mm-hmm. They say, you don't want this life. It's going to be hard work. And the thing about this movie was showing, you know, it showed a lot of people that there's a viable life ahead of somebody who has Down syndrome. They like David is so smart. and his family. And it's almost like having, you know, he was capable of doing so many things, and then where his disability tricked in or kicked in, it was almost like having a 6 or 7 year old in your house, which is just love, just so much love. And they, I mean, there are people who call them a love machine or love generators, and getting to go around the country and meeting different communities and meeting the people with special needs in those communities. I mean, there was something we did in Fresno, and it was a group called Breaking the Barriers, and it's all these kids with disabilities. Some are blind, some have one leg, or some are, have Down syndrome, whatever the disability was. And the woman who started this a program, and it's a gym, it's a facility for kids to go and do gymnastics, but they do this show. And so there's kids in wheelchairs that are knocking the wheelchair over, standing up on their hands. So they're doing a handstand in a wheelchair and then going back and then riding the wheelchair up. And there was a girl who, I mean, it was, and I went and saw this show that they do up in, you know, as a presentation for people up in Fresno, and it brought tears to my eyes because it just shows the strength and the power of the human spirit when you just live your life with joy and purpose and dedication. I mean, so the movie does have a little political bent, which is really a fight for life. You know, where there's life, there's hope. And my guy is an alcoholic, and he wants to commit suicide, you know, with drinking once his daughter hits legal age. And so you see a redemptive story, you know, how Christ can enter into your life and, you know, change it for the better.
Yeah, sure,
and then
yeah.
Ultimately, you know, I think what we have to, as people, we have to start asking ourselves, you know, what is the purpose of what we're doing? And what I do is a passion. My acting is a passion, but I also have a purpose, you know, and that's something that's being defined in my life right now. But that purpose is to, you know, push God's kingdom forward. And how do I do that? How do I live my life in a way that, you know, is salt and light, I guess?
Well, we hope Grows does that. And Chris plays someone named Calvin Campbell, who was a former professional baseball player that really goes downhill quickly. And and you can watch what happens because he changes because of meeting this young man from the named Produce from the supermarket. It's an incredible film, and I would recommend it highly. It's called Where Hope Grows. And Chris, I hope that you'll continue doing this. And if you ever decide you want to get into politics, or if you ever want to talk about something substantial in the future, please consider coming on here again, and we'll talk about whatever you like.
Thanks so much for the invitation. I hope to take you up one day on it.
All right, Chris. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.